This is Side Hustle with Luke and Omar. We'll explore what it takes to run a side hustle with talented individuals from different backgrounds and experiences. We will discuss things like taking the plunge, personal challenges, and the balancing act of maintaining a day job whilst side hustling to make the dream a reality. Now sit back, relax, as we talk to some of these amazing individuals. Welcome to another episode of Side Hustle. Today we have a special guest in the building, Karen Trigger. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much. And I've also got my co-host here, Luke Ferrugia.
Hey, everyone.
Karen, it's so good to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us on a Friday evening. It's not usually our day for recording, but thank you for being flexible. Introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about what you're currently doing and what you've got going outside of your 9 to 5 as well.
So my name is Karen and I'm from Chile. So I'm not Australian. I've been around for 5 years so far. And I work in the environmental sector, especially, particularly a charity. So it's a bit of a different work life or industry that not many people is really used to. My side hustle though, it's a bit different as well because I never actually got any money from it. So I don't know if it's a side hustle or more like a social project, but still same.
Same.
So I basically created this, want to call it a social enterprise because it is a registered business. And we facilitated community events. We did lots of cleanups, running with people, teaching people about recycling, about issues in the environment around plastic pollution and so on. So that's how I got into the environmental charity sector somehow. But my original background, though, I'm a vet. So I'm a wildlife vet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I did back at home. So I got the whole qualification to be a vet back in Chile.
Is it like a PhD or something or some sort of a diploma?
No. Like you get like a proper like degree. Like, yeah.
Oh, so yeah. Okay.
It's not a doctorate, but like it's called Doctor of Veterinary Medicine in Australia and the States. But basically you can just cut a dog open and operate and stuff like that. So I'm qualified to do that. I only did it at uni. I never did it as a job.
Okay.
Because I finished uni, I was pretty fed up with, you know, all the studying and like for 7-8 years, you have to do research and I wanted to help animals and somehow I just find myself pretty frustrated that I just didn't like the clinical environment anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, interesting. And, so did you figure that out, I guess, once you left uni or was that like while you were in the course?
I was at uni. Like I always knew like I didn't like to work, let's say, with dogs and cats and that type of pet stuff. And I started working with wildlife. I did an internship in Costa Rica. I lived there for a few months, worked with monkeys, sloths, and all these really cute, fluffy things. That was really fun. But it also kind of brought me into the scenario of like there's a lot of poaching, lots of black market. It was a really kind of tough industry. And I sort of thought, I'm helping a monkey, I'm fixing the monkey, putting the monkey back in the forest, you know. But then the next year, a logging company comes and logs the whole forest.
Wow.
You know, or then it gets poached because there's no enough protection or policy or regulation. So I thought, like, how can I have maybe a bigger impact in the environment that eventually is going to help the monkey to live a really happy life, you know, for longer?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. So you kind of worked backwards to find the source to say, okay, well, if the environment is right and certain corporate, private corporations can't get into that environment, then perhaps you can cultivate and, you know, save.
But I didn't really know back then. So I just sort of had this thought that I wasn't really happy following the veterinary life, sort of working career expectation. It was like, well, I don't think I'm up for this, but how can I maybe reassess what I'm doing? So anyway, finished my thesis, did some stuff in public health, went to Patagonia to do a research, which was pretty cool.
Wow.
But I got family there, so I kind of use it as a vacation excuse.
Absolutely.
Plus research, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And then I finished, I sold everything, and I just decided, you know, I'm just going to grab a one-way ticket to Australia. Because it's quite safe as a woman, you know, coming alone, not having anything, not having a job. They pay pretty good, better than New Zealand.
So did you already have a job secured here in Australia?
Yeah. I didn't have anything.
You had nothing. So just based on your research, you're like, I want to go to that part of the world and then Australia, New Zealand.
Yeah, I had a few friends in Melbourne, but I was like, well, I don't want to go to Melbourne. I want to maybe do something different because I wasn't really sure what I was going to get into.
Sure.
And I had a potential kind of work opportunity, but not really secure in Townsville to work in a zoo. But again, I was like, I don't know if I want to work in a zoo, you know. Anyway, I ended up just going to Cairns and I had the best time, but in something different. So got there, started applying for vet jobs, you know, I was like, well, why am I doing this? You know, I'm applying for like all this clinical stuff. I can't actually practice as a vet. I need to get validated. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, you need to balance out your degree here.
Yeah,
right?
You have to validate your degree, which is like basically like a 2 to 3 years process.
It's like, pretty much like another bachelor degree.
You have to almost ages. Like, I know, you have to basically do it again. It costs a lot of money and then like you're not have that security that you're going to get it like validated or it's just.
Yeah. My dad was a doctor in Iraq where I was born. And when we went to New Zealand, he had to do the same thing. And it actually took him almost 8 years to get his PhD.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a thing. So it's insane. Like animal health is the same as human health.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is fair. Mm. So I ended up just applying for a different type of job in the diving industry.
Wow. Okay.
Scuba diving. So I thought, well, what are the really cool things I can do in Cairns around Queensland? You know, you got the Great Barrier Reef or the rainforest.
Mm.
Rainforest, animal stuff. Cool. I'm going to try to apply for that. Mm-hmm. Fail. Okay. Reassess. What else can I apply to?
Let's go in the water.
Let's go in the water. And I really loved diving. So I had my open water certification and I thought, fuck it, I'm just going to give it a go.
Did you get the certification here or back?
Back home. So I got it just before moving here because I thought if I have something, just maybe just in case I can show, you know, well, I know how to swim.
Wow.
I can survive in the, under the water.
Yeah. So you're well prepared. Like you kind of almost covered almost everything in terms of what opportunities can be thrown at you to, you know, you were prepared before coming into here just to go, hey, I might go into this avenue or experience.
I mean, I had a bit of an idea. The things like it was, well, worst case scenario, if plan A, B and C fail, I can always do HOSPO. I work as a bartender back in New Zealand ages ago when I was 22.
Whereabouts in New Zealand?
Auckland.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I grew up in Auckland.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, whereabouts in Auckland?
It was a really crappy bar.
Yep.
I think it was like the Crown Bar down in like just really down in the city.
Okay. Was it near the viaduct or?
It was near Showgirls.
Oh, goodness.
Does that mean
that's a really, like tragic place.
Oh, really?
It's kind of like the dirty, dingy place. It's kind of the equivalent probably of like King's Row, Chapel Street mixed together at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Do you mean like King Street, like the stripper area?
Yeah.
The stripper joint plus Chapel Street. It's like K Road almost?
Yeah, kind of K Road, but like, kind of.
Yeah. It's just dirty, stingy, like.
Yeah, just bad.
The club next to Showgirls used to let us in, and we also had like fake IDs and stuff. They didn't give a shit. Like,
yeah, so we were like just across the street from Lipstick.
There we go.
There you go. So we had.
I should have known all this stuff, but. Yeah.
Just in case, No, I was not working in a strip show or anything. It was just a really bad bar, and we had the strippers coming and celebrating the birthdays bar. So that was it. It was really fun.
Yeah.
I did learn a lot, you know, and how kicking people out of the bar and stuff like that. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, that was my plan, let's say H for Cairns. Yeah. Like if nothing worked, well, I can always go back to HOSPO and do it. But I got a job in diving. So I was working
in
with a
Cairns?
In Cairns.
Sure. Yep.
And they train you up. So I got all the way up to dive master, which is like the under an instructor.
Wow.
So yeah, you can take people diving, you can instruct diving with a supervision. So it was pretty fun. Good experience. Yeah.
So just to jump into that real quick, just to understand, like, what is that job? Like, I understand diving, like, since you're diving, but like, what's the role? Like, what are you doing on a particular type thing?
So you can take, let's say, certified divers on diving tours. So you lead a group of people that they trust you, that you're not going to get lost and you're going to get them back in the boat. So you have to have a really good sense of direction underwater.
Yeah.
And you point at things, you know, you've got a bit of a sense of species ID, like, you know, oh, it's a clownfish, a jellyfish, cuttlefish. Mm-hmm. course, you indicate with hand signals, so because you can't really talk under the water.
Yeah, yeah. I'm assuming you would have briefed them before you guys jumped in the water. This hand signal means this. This means that.
That's a clownfish.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
And that's like a giant clam and lionfish.
Yeah, we're making hand signals here, by the way.
Just, by the way. Yeah.
Nice.
So that experience brought me really close to an amazing place, which is the Great Barrier Reef, and it was just insane. Wow. Like seeing all this like marine life, you know, like amazing, but then also I started seeing the stuff that was not as amazing, like plastic pollution, fish nets and things like that, and you're finding plastic bits here and there. It's like, wow, where's all this plastic coming from? You know, we're 60 k's away from shore. It's
all
insane.
All the shitty things like, human beings do.
Yeah, and like you kind of like understand like the environmental impacts that we have. And then another thing happened because I was back there between 2015 and 2016, which was one of the main coral bleaching events in the world.
Right.
So they had this really strong current of the El Nino, which is a hot current.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a lot of hot water in. Mm-hmm. And it was a really hot summer. So you ended up with having, I don't know, temperatures in the water of 31 degrees.
Wow.
Or even up to 33. So you would just jump in the water and it was basically like a bathtub. I don't know.
Wow.
And the issue with that is that the corals get stressed. Like corals are alive. It's not a rock, you know. It's like a whole group of organisms. And they basically, with that reaction, they end up starving themselves. And because it lasts for so long that they start dying.
Okay.
So I was just shocked, you know, seeing all the corals going white.
So that releases some sort of temperature into the water. Is that why the water was heating up? Was that the cause
No. So the cause of it is like different things like climate change, you know, global warming and all the stuff. And
global warming. Yep.
And also like the hot current of El Nino, you know, that it kind of happened all at the same time.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the coral itself has like a little algae.
Okay.
So imagine like the coral has a friend who is this algae that lives inside, and then this algae creates energy from the sun. So it feeds the coral back. So they have a really good friendship.
Okay.
And it also gives the color to the coral. So that's why like, you got purple and greens and blues.
I'm getting SpongeBob SquarePants in my head right now. As you're saying, like, he's got a friend and they just hang out and they change colors together.
Well, it's just to make it really like...
That's awesome. I love it.
So when the hot water comes in, after a while, the coral feel a bit, let's say, sick.
Mm-hmm.
And it just takes the algae out of the coral.
Right.
So it just kicks it out, you know?
Mm.
And if that happens for a long period of time, that's when the coral gets hungry and it ends up dying.
So then the algae doesn't come back?
No, because it's a reaction. Well, the temperature is so hot, the coral just releases this stuff, has this reaction. And usually it happens, you know, when you get the current of El Nino, that's normal, and you get that every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And then the coral is able to bounce back.
Mm-hmm.
But because it was for such a long time, like weeks and weeks and weeks, it was just not able to recover. So I started seeing that and I was like, whoa, this is pretty shitty.
Yeah.
This is like not really good. And I got involved with a group there of different divers in different commercial companies, you know, that we started volunteering and tracking this stuff.
Okay.
So
As a side thing to your diving job?
So I was just volunteering. So I had to go to like a little patch of coral that we had and take photos every month.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make like a follow-up of
just
what was happening.
Monitoring.
Then later on, you had this movie coming up, which is Chasing Coral, which happened at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually talked to a lot of people that I was working with. And to summarize, so this kind of experience opened my eyes to like, well, there's something here that I can maybe work on, which is like environmental field.
Wow.
Hmm.
And yeah, so that was it. Cairns was fun. It was a good life, you know. I could go and jump into diving and work in the industry. But I was like, well, what am I actually going to get from it?
Right.
Something that I want to do? No, actually, I got a vet degree, make into something more, you know.
Something more
than just diving. And yeah, it's nice. You get a tan and it's kind of like...
You're
around the water.
Tropical weather is beautiful.
But you get tired of cleaning and spew every day, to be honest.
Spew.
From other divers type thing? Or?
Yeah, people getting seasick. It happens all the time.
Oh, Not inside the water, obviously. Just
Oh, inside the water too. I've seen it too. Yeah, even like diving under the
mouth gear.
Even like diving under the water, like with the regulator on and just spewing, and then like all the fishes, you know, coming in like to eat. And it's like, oh god, and like it's funny.
So does that just get caught in their mouths? Like does it just sit
there? That's what I'm thinking. Does it like they go up their nose and their eyes?
Yeah. I don't ask too many questions. But I just look at it. Like I have seen it, you know, but like it's just usually just into the regulator, and then like you have to tell them to take it off and clean it, like purge it, and then like put it back on. And internally just having a big laugh because it's like full of fish everywhere trying to eat the spew, and it's like, oh god, this is like hilarious. Oh,
wow, that's totally like the non-sexy side of diving.
Yeah, of diving,
like,
yeah.
It would be so scary, like as that person, like how deep are you?
I was panicked, man. Yeah. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's going to get blocked.
I mean, yeah, I
need to breathe at the same time, so give me that, but hold on, it's full of fucking pukes, so what do I do? Ew.
Yeah, nah. Yeah, it's horrible. I think that's not the worst I've seen though. Like one time, I saw a girl spewing at the front of the boat against the wind when we were moving, and two guys were behind her, and of course the whole thing came into them and into the captain window, and we were like looking at this thing happening from the inside, and we were like,
slow motion.
Oh my god. They're like, holy crap, and they just came in like covering spew, you know, from like head to toes, and it's like, I don't know how you can hold it together, because I'll be like vomiting myself anyway. But that's
all right.
So, scuba diving looks pretty cool, looks pretty sexy as an industry, but then you have to deal with all these other things that they're not as cool.
I want to see a documentary about that part of it. That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That would be pretty funny.
Yeah, like, because like a lot of people told me, like, oh, you got the dream job. It's like,
if you only knew.
Yes, the dream job, but maybe a nightmare too. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, so before we move on, just what's that percentage then? Like what percentage is
Luke is not going to let it go.
What percentage is nightmare?
Well, it depends. Because like, for example, I would say maybe half of the day was really nice.
Yeah.
When you're like in the water, you know, talking to people, getting to know people. But then the other half was in the morning when you had to clean all the people vomiting from cans to the reef, because people there were not taking the seasick pills and all the stuff, you know, and they're like, oh, everyone's sick, clean up breakfast, okay. And then on the way back, the worst part at the end of the day was cleaning the wetsuits, because a lot of people pee on them.
Do they like just in them, you mean?
In them when in the water. So a lot of people think, oh, I'm just gonna pee in the water because no one's gonna notice. We notice, because then we have to turn it back, you know, out, and you have to put your hand in, and they're warm and smelly, and it's like, oh my god. So that was not really nice.
Yeah, that sounds really bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, you got the dream. It's like, well, it depends. Do you like spew and pee? Maybe. Yeah.
it's like working at a freaking retirement village or something. It's cleaning spew pee. Like, come on, man.
But it was a good experience. I had a lot of fun. Yeah.
I bet.
Yeah.
All right. So what you've told us so far has been amazing. You've definitely set the tone in terms of what you've done, what you're currently doing. What I'm interested in is the empathy side of it, because it seems like whatever you've done, you've always kind of taken a step back and had a look at your, well, what you're currently doing from the outside in. So you've always stepped out of the square or the box and had a look inside to go, all right, is this actually meaningful? What am I actually doing to, you know, to add to this impact or to remove some of the impact? What more can I do? So how have you developed this empathy for, I guess, keeping the world ticking in a much cleaner way, the empathy for animals, environment, how has that developed? Is it something that you've grown up with, experience?
So I was born in Santiago, but I live in Patagonia for my first 4 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I always had pets. So I was
how old
always,
were you at the time when you went
like,
to Patagonia?
I was literally born in Santiago, and then a few months later, like, we moved to Patagonia because my dad was in the army.
Sure.
So he got transferred, and I lived there, I think, until I was 4.
Okay.
So, like, literally, I was, like, always in nature, picking up little bugs and things. And
so your family were quite surrounded. They liked being in nature and being in this type of environment, or not quite?
I mean, I don't think my mum did, but she had to move, you know. It was part of the service. And then my dad ended up working as well in Antarctica, which was really cool.
Wow.
We didn't get to go, sadly, just my dad. But he still has really cool photos with penguins and all those cool things.
That's awesome.
And so I got that kind of vibe from, like, being surrounded in nature, I guess, from back then. But we always had pets, always. So we ended up even having 9 dogs.
All at once, I think, or
yeah.
Just stray dogs, or did you
South America has this big issue with stray dogs. So the dogs everywhere, you know, it's basically like jungle law. Like, you got animals, they're all feral. Like, I'm pretty surprised people keep animals here pretty much indoors, which is really good. Never let your dog or cat go outside, please. That's really bad. So we ended up just adopting all these animals from different situations, like really bad shelters or abuse, or people that they want to give them away or put them down. And we just ended up just hoarding dogs, which is not bad if you have the space.
So your parents were quite passionate about these stray dogs, just to give them a better life, or...
I was studying veterinary. My sister then started doing the same. She started doing veterinary science too. So it was kind of like... we were just showing up with animals. It's like,
oh, you and your sister, we just rock up to the house and be like, hey, mom, we got 2 of these. Can we keep
them? Yeah, basically. Wow. We had like the space. It's like, we're bringing this too. And like cats and little things and like birds. And like, I found this sick bird.
Parents had no saying. They was like, all right, fine. I guess the intention's right. Let's see where this goes.
Yeah. And like, look, my dad was always saying, like, as long as we can have space and we can keep them, like, sure.
Okay. So they were very encouraging of that. Okay.
I mean, my dad didn't agree with the 9 dog, but but I kind of convinced him later.
It's interesting, though, because when you're talking about in the veterinarian school, like, not liking the clinical side, but then thinking about all those animals at home, like, in your sort of environment.
Yeah.
So you could see how there's, like, such a – would be a big difference from going from, like, looking after animals at home to, like, being in that sort of clinical environment and having to, like, deal with that. Was that kind of, I guess, part of that – was there a bit of a connection there, maybe?
Not really. I mean, like, we already had a lot of pets. And look, since I was super little, since I had memory, I always wanted to become a vet.
Yeah.
And everyone, like, was not really surprised when I became a vet.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was not just that. Like, it just happened that then I was studying veterinary science and we had all this, like, mini zoo. Not farm, but like even like we had 2 horses at the time. Wow. So literally we had so many animals, which is really cool. But the whole like kind of giving back, it was more like, well, I was pretty privileged in terms of like having a really good family, that we had resources. You know, my dad, then he started a side hustle as well and sort of got out of the army and did something else, but with my mum. So I think that kind of just passing to all of us. And we were thinking, well, how can I make something with what I have that's not just for me? Because you can always have, I don't know, like making money is not really a good purpose, you know, because that runs out. And like, if you were, I don't know, like if you're 80 or 90 and then you look back and it's like, oh, what did I do in my life? Or just money, just filling up my pockets. So it's like a bit crappy, you know? So I thought, well, how can I use the education I have, the opportunities, like the good support network and all the stuff, you know, to have something that I can look back and say, actually did really cool shit, you know. But that was really cool.
Where did that come from? Because it seems like that's deep within. I mean, you mentioned that your father and your mom got together and kind of created a side hustle, and I'm assuming something along the lines of, I don't know, saving camels in Egypt or something.
Actually, no, I'm going to disappoint you. My dad, he sells car parts from the States. So he just has this business bringing, importing pieces from the States into Chile.
Right.
But somehow, so that was his side hustle. That for him, the priority was like, I need to feed my family.
Sure, absolutely.
Because with four kids, you know.
I'm assuming he retired from the army.
Yeah. So at the end, like, it just, like, he did it on the side. And then it just became like, wow, I'm actually making 3 times more my salary from the army. But then I can actually work from home. Yep. That's one. Two, I can provide enough for my family. Mm-hmm. And with 4 children, that's a lot. So he thought, well, I need to make the decision here. Because even I like the army and I like the stuff. And he was like in telecommunications, like electronic engineer. It's like, no, I'm just going to leave that on the side. I had a lot of fun and just put this here.
Right. Okay. So you've seen an example in your life where someone has left a career and potentially started something on the side that became their full-time. So you've kind of seen that transition. You've seen that entrepreneurial spirit, I guess.
I mean, you didn't really know that it was like being an entrepreneur. I think this, I'm talking about mid-90s when my dad was started like this stuff. So,
but you were around it and you probably heard conversations and seen
the shift, I saw him, perhaps. You know, like when he started, he had like this really crappy computer, which is like basically this like MS-DOS, you know, like black screen and a fax machine and a block of notes. And that was his business. That's it.
Wow. And then did he have all the parts in the house, like around the house as well? Like,
well, he was ordering by the man, but then I remember like when I was little and we were like dropping by car dealers, you know, or like this sort of workshops, you know, where they fix the cars and stuff to drop calendars. And he had different type of calendars.
Right.
So corporate calendars and not so corporate calendars, you know, with the like semi-naked ladies that you want to put over the truck, you know. And I was like, well, yeah. So
the really dirty like workshop and.
Yeah. So I remember that stuff and it was just laughing. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe that. Yeah. We were like little. It's like, Dad, what's like that lady's naked on top of the truck?
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you've seen your dad and your mom kind of go away and start their own thing. What I want to come back to is in terms of the drive, because it seems like you haven't settled. I'm not sure if you've settled yet, but it seems like from what you've told us since leaving Chile and coming here, it's just you're constantly just exploring. You're constantly trying to figure out what is the thing that's going to give you that satisfaction and making an impact.
Yeah, it was more like finding my mission, you know, like my mission in life, like what I want to do, that I got the education, I got access to things, I don't need to worry about food and shelter, whatever. So what can I give to the rest of people, you know, or like environment or whatever, that it's going to be just bigger than just myself. Then I just remember another thing. I also started a business when I was in veterinary school.
Of course you did.
selling like uniforms, scraps. Because then my parents, they brought me some scraps from the States with like prints on it, you know, like the medical uniform stuff. And we didn't have that in Chile. So all the stuff in Chile that was accessible to you, it was horrible and boring.
Sure.
And I had this really beautiful t-shirt for like little doggies and monkeys, and all my friends were like, oh, where do you get this from? It's like, how many do you want?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, literally, I started selling scraps and medical supplies like out of the blue, because then my dad was bringing stuff from the States, so I just like putting my stuff in just between his stuff.
Just putting in his container.
That's what I did.
Wow.
And the whole purpose of this was like, I want to pay my trips backpacking around South America.
Okay. So pretty much fundraising by default, just to.
I didn't see like, oh, I'm going to become like, you know, the main uniform dealer of Chile. But I was like, no, I want to go to Colombia for 2 months. I need X amount of money. I'm just going to just sell X amount of t-shirts and stethoscopes and stuff, and then I'm gonna go.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah, that was a fun experience, and yeah, it was good. Okay. So
you're also good at picking out different opportunities and trying to capitalize on them as best you can, but still not with that kind of greedy mindset of just making money. It's just to serve just a certain purpose. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that in mind, do you want to talk us through what your current gig is, outside of your 9-to-5, and kind of take us on that journey a little bit?
Yeah. So what happened then, just to get there?
Mm-hmm.
Came to Melbourne after that whole Great Barrier Reef experience. Mm-hmm. And then I decided, okay, I want to do something with the environment. I need to study then. I need to do something else, a master's degree. Mm-hmm. I don't know what, but I'll find out. And I started like having a look, you know, well, what are the offers? Melbourne, Sydney, Queensland. Am I going to go to the UK? I don't really know. And then I somehow started applying for a few in Melbourne.
Okay.
So I thought like, well, if I got to the UK, yeah, I got a German passport, but it's a bit cold there.
Mm. By the way, yeah, you just said a German passport and probably we haven't covered that. Can we just cover that part of the story first before we get to...
Grandpa's German. So, okay. Yeah, that's how I got the German benefits, but I haven't been to Germany yet.
Right, from mom's side or dad's side?
That's
okay,
right.
Okay, so dad's from Germany.
I mean, my grandpa. Yeah, dad was born in Chile, but my grandpa, he's German.
Gotcha, okay.
And my grandpa from my mum's side, he's German, but we didn't get the stuff from him.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so we got a bit of German there, but born and bred in Chile.
Yeah, hence the last name.
So Traeger.
Yeah, okay, awesome, sorry. Yep.
It's good pronunciation. So started applying for master's degree. I got into this massive environment at Melbourne Uni.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I wasn't really clear of how I wanted to take that course in which direction. So I was like, well, what am I going to do? Like, is it food security or like fisheries or water management or conservation? And I started thinking, well, conservation is that'll be awesome. But the reality is that there are not many jobs out there. So it's a few organizations, it's pretty competitive. I want to make sure as an international student in Australia, I finish the degree and I actually get a job.
Yeah.
Because I need to start paying, you know, what I'm actually doing here.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started just drifting a little bit, not away, but kind of putting a few skills on the table as like food security. So I started putting, well, if I work in sustainable food systems, like sustainable fishery or regulations, I can help conservation as a second outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So if I create a better food system, then we don't have to, you know, dip in too much into
the ocean
or whatever it's happening. Yep. So I thought like, okay, well, everyone eats food every day. Mm. We're going to be growing a lot as a, you know, population and we're going to need food. So it makes sense that I can put some subjects on food stuff.
Okay.
Then I did some others in community stuff, but then I decided, you know, I'm pretty good on fixing problems. Like I like building projects, and then I started like getting involved with the startup weekends. Mm-hmm. I pitched a project one time and it was just like, I don't know, I'm just going to give it a go, see what's a startup experience sort of thing.
Nice.
It's like, you know what? I actually really like project stuff. So then I did a project management course.
Okay.
And then I did innovation and entrepreneurship. And then I started doing more like, okay, how can I manage a project more formally? Because right now it's me figuring stuff out and it doesn't make sense.
Mm. You need a bit of a structure or some sort of a process.
Yeah, like I want to get a template or get an approach or getting some sort of framework.
When you say figuring stuff out in relation to what, like in relation to the job you had at the time or...
Well, no, like my job at the time was like nothing related to anything. I was just working in sales for a food company, but just selling like Whole Foods and like doing some admin work in marketing. So I started like kind of crafting, you know, well, what's my superpower here? So what can I do that? Because the whole startup experience kind of sparked a little bit, you know, myself. I'm like, oh, that was fun. But
yeah, of course.
I couldn't really bring it up bit longer because I'm not a developer, so that was my main constraint. That's not my superpower.
Yeah.
I felt a constraint. I couldn't really put it forward. So then I started thinking, well, what did I do? I like running. Mm. I like the environment. What can I do with that?
Okay.
And then I found myself when I was training for this 100K race.
Now, how are you going to stop this girl?
I'm sorry.
Do you ever relax? Do you ever just sit down and like watch some trash TV or something and have a pizza?
I actually do. Yeah? Like, okay. Yeah, okay. I actually, cool. Yeah. Cool. Anyway.
Apologies about the interruption.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So I was training for this big ultra marathon in the Blue Mountains and I started looking at all this rubbish, you know, along the trails, started picking it up. And then at some point I had this alignment moment. It's like, holy fuck, this is my superpower.
Mm.
I run fucking insane distances and yeah. I'm picking up trash. What is this stuff goal?
Will you, do you just like run 10 meters, see some wrapper on the side, pick
and
that
I'll
up?
And I'll just pick it up and then keep and going, you know?
It, like, where does it go?
Well, I had a, like, when you're running long runs, I usually wear like a hydration vest. Mm. So it's like you've got your pockets, you know, and I was like filling it up. And then it's like, well, this is like a lot. I'm done with this. I need to do something about it and I'm going to do a cleanup event. That's it. You know, you give a shit about the council or like, well, not really, but not yeah. now. But
and this was here in Melbourne, yeah?
Here in Melbourne. Okay, it's like, yeah. I'm just don't care if I have to get a pay. I'm just going to do a cleanup event.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just myself as a normal person, individual.
Yeah.
I don't care. So I brought some friends together.
Yeah.
I told them like, hey, we're going to do a cleanup event, Stanley Park, come this day. We get all coffee later. That's it. And I was like, what are you going to do? Cleanup event? But the park is so clean. We never see rubbish. It's like, you're going to see so much.
Yeah, okay.
It's like, no, come. I think I got almost like 15 friends coming. We had a really good fun for like 2 to 3 hours picking up a shitload of stuff. Even like pillows and like a duna. I don't know if it's like a lob nest somehow. I don't know. It's just like, yeah, but like you were finding a lot of stuff in the park. And they were like pretty shocked that they were like, oh my God, we need to come back. And it's like, yes, I'm coming back. So I started doing it every month.
Yep.
And I thought, well, this is basically me paying my fee for using this park. So this is going to be my giving back to the park.
Wow.
So I'm running it, you know, like I'm using it for my training. I don't have to pay for the access. I'm going to give back.
Wow.
And somehow like random people started showing up and I was like, wow, what is happening? I got something.
So you mean without any word out kind of thing? Like no. People just knew you would be there and...
No, I would just put the word out, you know, on Facebook, on a running group.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm doing this, blah, 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 this day. Come and pick up some trash and blah, blah, blah. Super fun. Coffee later. And I had like some people I knew showing up and then they were bringing some friends or they were passing the word to someone and it's like, oh, I'm coming too. So I think like by 6 months in, I thought, crap, this is actually something. And I started like thinking in my head, like, how am I going to call this stuff? I was like, plastic runner. I run for plastics, the plastic runner. And then I was like, domain, GoDaddy. Oh, no one has it. Awesome. Bye.
Nice.
And I didn't really know like how to build a website. And I was like, well, I will just figure out later. At least I got the domain. I can use that as a name. And I started like building up the Instagram and like putting stuff there, you know, creating content on the events. And it's like kind of like slowly started rolling into this big snowball or trash ball in this case. But that I think after say 10 months, I had a bit of a following and then I started like putting the website together, my
experience. So how long ago did you start the Plastic Runner initiative?
It's been 3 years now.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's been 3 years.
Yep.
Yeah. So back then I was still in uni, you know, doing my master's degree, working part-time, training for 100K and then running this stuff.
And
people were like, how the fuck do you do it? And it's like, I don't know.
Did you have a social life? Did you have a partner? Did you...
I had a partner, but then, I wasn't really into parties as much because I'm a bit older and I did a lot of partying back in my early 20s. And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. Like, you know, I'd rather go for a run or something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So as you were saying, so you started this Facebook group or you started putting the word out on Facebook and then after a certain point, you got the website done, you got the Instagram done. And then where is it now? Where has it progressed to?
Yeah. So eventually what happened is that I registered as a business because I started thinking, well, how can I not monetize, but how can I bring resources into this stuff to make it grow or even like self-fund it in a way that I could put some like marketing in, you know, ads and stuff. Because at the moment it was all coming from my pocket.
Of course.
So I started with... just simple stuff as, you know, Squarespace. My ex-partner at the time, lucky me, he was a website engineer.
Okay.
Yeah,
so cool. He sort of put something together at the moment. And then I stepped in later and then I did the website that we have right now.
Yeah.
That was a whole experience, like me building it from scratch.
Like through the Squarespace, sort of like through your DIY sort of thing?
Yeah. Like, so I had a previous one, which was super simple. Yeah. And then like on the side, like after uni, I would stay like, you know, working in the day, then the class, and then I would stay studying and building up my website and like learning it, like how did I want it to look like and following a style guide or whatever. And like learning how to schedule posts and create content and hashtags and
just from scratch, just teaching yourself.
Just like, you know, I'm just going to read about SEO and like read about this stuff and read about newsletters. And then it's like MailChimp and all the stuff. So it was
all that. Well, sorry to cut you off. But with all that stuff going on, I'm really interested in like, so all that stuff's going on and you find that time to work on that website and learn like this whole new craft, I guess.
Yeah.
How did you feel in those moments when you were like,
it was fun. Kind of thing. Yeah, it was pretty fun because then the things like we'd work, like the real work back then, I didn't have really a lot of control on what I could actually do. Mm-hmm. So I was feeling like, it's kind of monotonous. I don't know. It's just a bit boring. It's not really encouraging or like, it just lacked the spark, you know?
It's a 9-to-5. It's paying the bills.
That's a thing. So I started like kind of learning a lot of stuff that, well, this is actually a skill I can take anywhere, right? Like I can tell someone, well, I know how to do social media marketing from scratch, you know? And like I know how to build up a newsletter, so you can't really give me any bullshit because I have done it myself, you know? And like I had to build a website because I have done it myself too.
And build a brand, I guess,
And build a brand and like do, you know, even like media stuff, contacting ABC Radio and like saying, hey, I got this stuff. You want to come for an event? Wow. And then getting Amanda Smith coming in the podcast. I don't know. It's just,
it's what I'm picking up here is like no task is too big or too small for you. Like it seems like when you've got your mind set on something, nothing is going to act like a barrier or a closed door. Like it seems like you just kind of, you've got a vision, you see it through, setting up a website or getting an email letter done or setting up an ABN for your thing or getting in touch with radio stations. It's just like, at some point, if I was doing something like that, I'd be like, oh, hold on, this is a bit too hard basket for me. I'm just going to shy away from it. And just
it was just fun. Yeah, that was the thing because it was mine. So I was putting time in and effort, you know, and like just being curious, like, well, if I do something, you know, it could be really fun to see how this can grow somewhere, like without the idea of monetizing it. So I never thought, I was just like, I don't know how this is going to look like.
Yep.
I'm just going to keep focusing on my goal, which is helping the environment, you know, and in this case, I'm just using my super skill, which is running stupid distance, you know, as a as a branding material that I can just use to capture some media stuff.
Yeah, so pretty much you focus on this kind of outlet, which is running, just to obviously exercise. Is something you like doing, I'm assuming. Is something you've been doing for since you were younger, running?
Not really, I was 24.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's something you picked up.
Yeah.
And then you merged it with this other thing to pick up rubbish because you're just passionate about keeping a clean environment, and you kind of merged the two. But what I'm interested in is the drive. What kept you going at night? Like if you faced a problem with the content management system, or you've got some sort of an application that's not being approved or something, like how'd you deal with the setbacks?
Well, it's always good to learn, you know, like I wasn't really feeling discouraged. It was like, well, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I just try something different. That's it. And it's just like more like, well, have your plan A, B and C, just like having some sort of backup system that if someone fails, well, you're still running the event, running your content or doing something. But it was kind of like an experiment. So that's why I was like super open to expecting that something was going to fail, you know, because it was like, well, this is a fucking experiment. I don't really know what's going to come out of it.
So you had no expectations at all. No, you just kind of threw yourself at it and just kind of kept seeing it through.
Yeah, like my main expectation was like, how can I build skills for myself that then I can actually show that on my resume later? It's more like, well, when I come to the real work environment, I can just walk around and like, look, I didn't really stick to just uni. Uh-huh. I actually got a whole set of skills that I built by myself. And I can just bring into a table.
So self-improvement.
And I can show that with, you know, like facts. It's not something that, oh, I did this course in EDX. And it's like, which is really good that you do that. But it's like, I actually applied the shit and like did it. And this is what you can see here.
So from there, have you factored that into your current 9-to-5 at all? Like all of those learnings?
Well, here comes the thing. So within this whole project, I got involved with working with council, you know, like they ended up even...
Through Plastic Runner, you got introduced to some council connections?
Yeah, so okay. I even like facilitated some sessions for City of Melbourne.
Okay.
And they pay me.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, wow, I can actually get paid for a facilitator session.
What is a facilitator session?
Running the session, so running an event. And you're like...
picking up rubbish, like what you were doing...
Yes, but yeah, for council. So at the time, they had this plugging event with the Sustainability Festival.
Uh-huh.
And I thought like, oh, who's actually running that for them? I'll be curious. I can maybe attend and maybe give a hand, you know, help. And I sort of shoot them an email like, hey, do you need any help with the plugging event? I have been doing this for
Plugging?
Plugging.
Plugging, okay.
I have been doing this plugging stuff for like the last 10 months. We have been facilitating all of these events. If you need help, let me know.
Mm.
And then they said, oh, no, we got all figured out. It's all good. And then like a few hours later, how much do you charge? And I was like, wow, I can charge for this? I was going to do it for free. I was like, okay, well, and then I thought like maybe there's something here that I can actually start charging, not just to put money on my pocket, but it's like, well, I'm going to start building up the website. That's $350 with domains and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How can I use this money to self-fund it?
Yeah.
So I did that with City of Melbourne.
Wow.
Which is really cool. And then I started building connections, you know, not with City of Melbourne, but like City of Yarra and other councils and also other organizations. So I started like, well, who can I partner up with to do like cross-pollination on content, building up networks and stuff like that. So if I'm running an event, I have people promoting my stuff too, and then I can promote their stuff too. So that type of stuff. And it happened that during one of my events, one girl saw my ex-partner running around with this bag of trash, you know, and she's like, well, what's going on? Like, what is this? And like, oh, no, we like plugging. You have to talk to my girlfriend, you know, like blah, blah, blah. Like, she will tell you all about it. And then she came over and we had a bit of a chat and it's like, oh, yeah, I work at the Yarra Riverkeeper Association. It's like, oh, that's really cool. And it's like, well, let's stay in touch and see if we can collaborate somehow. It's like, yep, sweet. A few months passed. And they run this really cool event that you go kayaking in the Yarra and like cleaning up stuff, like just litter everywhere. It's a really fun concept. And they wanted me to volunteer. Like, do you want to come and help? It's like, yeah, sure. Like, I'll come and help. And I bring a whole like group of volunteers, you know.
Like an army
volunteers. And like, we can help. So I ended up just helping doing the waste audit. So you're basically a Marie Kondo of trash.
Wow.
Classifying all this like pieces of microplastics in different categories.
Wow.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so it's pretty fun because then you can see the main kind of responsible items for pollution in the river.
Right.
And that goes into the bay, so you can get a bit of a sense, you know, what type of single-use plastic is it's worse.
Mm-hmm.
So I started volunteering with them. I volunteered, I think, maybe for a year.
Okay.
With
and all this the, was, you've still got that other nine
yeah,
to
yeah,
five.
Still. Okay. Like, still, yeah. Like, the 9 to 5, you know. Yep. Still the my blogging project and then volunteering with them every now and then in their events. So I would just be the one running the waste audit and helping there. And then it happened that I started finishing uni and I got a job in the fish market.
Right.
Running a recycling program for them.
Okay.
So it was pretty cool. We started like trying to tackle polystyrene and trying to create a bit of behavior change within the whole people in the market. Got rid of all the polystyrene cups. So that was my big win because they were using around 400 every day.
So what did you replace with? Like, what was the...
Huh? Sorry?
What was the replacement? What did you replace
them with? Bio cups.
Yeah, cool.
Because then eventually the whole purpose is like once it's a clean stream, we can collect them and bring biopack to compress them. So that was the whole idea. And even like just going into general waste in the meantime, it's more like a behavior change concept that they have something that they can feel proud of. Like, oh my God, we just got rid of polystyrene, which is really bad. And they can start getting into more like the sustainability topics. And
awesome.
Yeah. So it takes a bit of a time. It's really great. And kind of like when I was implementing it, I got approached.
Okay.
So, and that was, again, the Yarra Riverkeeper. They offered me a job.
Yarra of?
Yarra Riverkeeper.
Yarra Riverkeeper. Okay.
The same organization I was volunteering with every now and then. They was like, hey, are you... looking for a job right now. And I was like, well, you know, the fish market has been really fun, but waking up at 2:30 in the morning is a bit of a tough thing.
is that how early you were waking up to work at the...
Yeah.
Really?
2:30 in the morning. And until? I was finishing my degree as well. So I start work at 4 and then I finish at 12.
You're insane. Wow.
And then I would have
and
to...
Your degree at the same time.
And I was in my last semester, so I had to like do that work in the morning, go back home, take a nap, study, go to class at 6:30.
Run, collect rubbish.
Run, collect rubbish, yeah. And
try
like,
to feed yourself in between.
I know. And like literally I had class at 6:30 p.m. until 9:30. I would get home by 10:30, go to bed by 11 and then like repeat.
What are you?
Oh, no, like, look, it was not really great. Like, I was just literally just falling apart by the end. I was just, like, super tired, really exhausted. And I was like, crap, this is not really a healthy, like, system, you know, because I want to keep a social life. I want to keep running.
Yeah, yeah.
But then how I had to adjust my kind of sleeping cycle, patterns, you know.
Yeah,
the whole thing, especially, like, the last semester was pretty challenging because
absolutely.
I had class.
Absolutely.
Yeah, after I finished uni, that was a bit easier, yeah, but still, yeah.
How did that affect like your, I don't know, relationships, mental health? Because it seems like you're quite driven and you've got your eyes set on the goal, but surely other things you would have had to sacrifice for your mission, right?
Yeah. So it was pretty hard for my relationship back then because, you know, like I was working in the morning. He didn't want to wake up at 2:30.
Yeah.
And fair enough.
I wouldn't blame him. I mean,
Same. Wow. And yeah, like I don't really blame him. And then that kind of like brought a bit of a, you know,
a bit of stress on the relationship.
Friction and stress. And yeah, it just ended up, well, all the things sort of accumulated, but then we had to break up.
Yeah.
But in terms of mental health, I think I've always been kind of really aware of things or just trying to practice a lot of mindfulness and meditation and like, okay, I'm not doing well. What should I do? You know, I'm going to do journaling and I just go and journal shit or I'm going to go for a run because I'm very angry. And I'm just going to do a spit session and use all my anger to get some really good intervals. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm usually someone that eats pretty healthy. So that kind of really balanced out. But yeah, I admit that by the end of that year working the fish market, I was feeling really tired.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Good experience, but I was exhausted.
Yeah. No, I can definitely imagine just you called out so many different things and I just had to kind of tap into that a little bit just to see how you maintained your sanity. Cause I think
I'd be
an alcoholic or like a freaking like druggie or something by that point. I was like, I'll need substances to keep me going.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, no, it was hard. And like, look, especially because like I used to be a smoker. So back home.
Just like cigarettes?
Yeah, cigarettes. Yeah. I started smoking when I was 13. It's pretty common back in Chile
that you start smoking super young
because it's cool, but it's not. Mm. And then I stopped smoking when I moved here because I knew that.
At what age?
I was 27.
All right, so you had been 14, smoking since 13.
14 years of smoking.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming you don't smoke now.
No, because I thought, you know what? Australia is actually pretty expensive to smoke.
Yeah, it is.
That's one.
Yep.
And then the other thing, I was training for my first marathon and I couldn't really get away with it.
What got you into running, just out of curiosity?
A breakup.
Ah.
Yeah. So I had a breakup when I was 24.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, what can I do to like kind of find myself again? And I had some friends doing this all like... 5K, 10K. I was like, well, I can give it a go. You know, it's better than, I don't know, just eating your feelings.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. I mean, you still eat your feelings for a while, but you can't do it forever.
Yeah.
I did that I gave myself 1 month to train for this 10K race. And it's like, well, how hard could be 10K? It was horrible.
Really,
really bad.
Yeah.
I literally walked half of it, but I finished it. I got a medal and I was like, oh, I actually feel really nice right now.
Accomplished.
Yeah. And I just started doing it again. Yeah.
Seems like breakups do wonders for you.
I know.
On a personal level or like on an achievement level. So like every single time you break up with someone, like you're doing something great.
So was that 10K while you were like transitioning off smoking? Like
No. So I was still smoking, you know, and it's I did the 10K. It's like, oh, that was pretty crap, but I will do it again because it felt nice. And then basically in like 6 months, I transitioned from 10K into my first half marathon. And that was pretty okay. I guess because I was 23, 22, I could just get away with it, you know, like just running a hangover or running and smoking. But then when I started training for my first marathon, I was like, "That this is not working." Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's go back to when you got poached at that point by Yarra River Keeper.
Yeah.
How did that exchange go between yourself and them, and what do they want you to do at the time? And
I was super excited because I felt like my previous boss was always telling me off, not telling me off, but she was like having a bit of a laugh. It's like, "Oh, Corinne, you sound so much like a charity sort of thing or like a non-profit." When I was putting posters, you know, in the fish market, like, "Look after the fish in the ocean." It's like,
"Help the fish."
Help the fish. So she was like, "Oh, that sounds too environmental, not for profit." And I was like, "Okay, I'll just change it for a bit more corporate, you know."
Mm.
So when they gave me the call, I was like super excited, like, yes, 9 to 5, like literally I can sleep like a normal person. Yeah.
What was the position that they offered you at the time?
They offered me project manager at the time. And I said like, yeah, sweet. I love projects. I'm basically doing all the stuff, you know, I got a few years of experience with my project and this, all the fish market stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like, let's go. Started my position last year on the 9th of March. And what we all know, what happened 2 weeks later. So I started as project manager, really excited. I was like, well, this is going to be cool, like putting some really good stuff in this project, which is regenerating the Yarra, like putting planting sites and like plants in the ground, climate resilience. Awesome. Basically dream job, like conservation stuff. Yeah. And it's like, oh my God, I got the job. Okay. You know, like, and on the second day, the executive officer at the time, he was a volunteer. He said, "You know, Corinne, we actually take like, we like to take over this, like my position." It's like, "What do you mean?" It's like, "Well, we're offering like to you to become like the EO basically." It's like, What
is EO?
Like executive officer. But his role was more like a COO.
Mm.
So then we just sort of rebranded because at the time there was a CEO who was the river keeper. So it's like, hey, if we got a CEO, it doesn't make any sense that you got an EO as well.
Sure.
What am I? Like a little mini me? No, it's like
their little sidekick or something? Or
yeah. So like we workshop it and we just became like, okay, realization. I'm going to be working more in operations. I'm doing that already. And then the river keeper stays as the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really great. But yeah, like 2 weeks into the role, everything changed and the world went into a pandemic and it was like just a new experience for everyone. I had to just onboard everyone online. I had never done it. And I was like, well, you know, I'm just going to be super honest with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Just like from day one. I was like, look, guys, I don't know how this is going to work. Like, if it doesn't work, we just try something else. And you just need to tell me. You know, like, I'm super open, super honest. I have never been managing staff ever. I have been managing volunteers, you know, just managing staff, not really, like training staff in different positions. But, like, I'm going to try to make my best, you know.
I'm assuming those staff were paid or they were
paid.
Yeah, okay.
So I had a team.
It's a different ballgame.
Yeah, I had a team of four, you know, direct reports to me and I had to like be super honest, like I'm going to fuck it up at some point, you know.
Yeah, I
admit like I'm going to fuck it up and you're going to fuck it up and we're all going to fuck it up. That's fine. But just recognize that you did a mistake. I'm going to do the same, you know, when I do a mistake, I'm going to recognize my mistake and I'm going to work on it. And if I do something and you don't like it, it's your responsibility
to tell me.
Tell me.
Yep.
Because then I can't read your mind.
Exactly.
And if I don't read your mind, then I can't fix it. And it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really kind of eye-opening experience, like bringing a whole new team into an organization that it was scaling up because we got this big funding from
government.
And that allowed the organization to kind of like, it's basically like a startup that got venture capital, you know. It's just like boom, injection of X amount of dollars.
In the beginning of the pandemic, you guys got that
funding. In the beginning.
That's
like,
pretty lucky.
Well, I mean, we got it in December.
Yeah.
And then they brought me in March.
Yeah.
And I had a bit of a template of what they wanted as a project, but then I had to like, well, how do I want this project to look like in the operational side of things?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I had to like reshape it a little bit and then just kind of bring the team into that program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had never done it. It was a lot of fun, I guess. Like I thought, well, this is a challenge. If I can do it, it's really good learning. If I can't do it, well, I'll just step back, reassess, see how I can swift, you know, a few pieces here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also was pretty aware that it was my first time doing this type of stuff. And I was like, well, if I'm going to fuck it up, at least I want to have someone backing me up. And I got a coach.
A business coach or?
Just like a mentor, you know, like professional leadership mentor. So she's been working in the same sort of industry, not-for-profits, government, charity sector, and a lot of experience with water, so water management and all that stuff. I don't know how I found her. Like, well, it was through a Facebook group that started, like, asking, like, I need a coach, this type of industry. Started, like, interviewing people, and then I met her. I was like, all this online. I was like, that's it. You are my friend right now.
You're my algae.
That's it. You're my algae. Coral. I'm your coral. Let's come and, yeah, nice. Let's do some coral reef. But
before we move a little bit further, I just want to just play that back. I feel like we've covered a lot of stuff right now really, really fast.
Yeah.
Just to play it back to make sure I'm understanding properly. So before the Riverkeeper job, you were volunteering.
Yeah.
That got you noticed to then be poached for the position.
Yeah.
And then on your second day, you got promoted?
I mean, on my second day, they offered me this sort of high position. Yeah. And I was like, okay, why not? I mean, if I don't say yes right now, I'm missing out maybe the opportunity of my life, you know?
So what is your current title at the moment?
So I'm the CEO now.
Yeah. So how did you get to that point? Because I'm pretty sure I checked your LinkedIn on my way here on the tram and I'm like, hold on, she has those like three acronyms here. Is she going to be one of those like corporate people that's going to come in here with a corporate clothes or whatever? By the way, if you guys obviously can't see what Karen's got on, but she's pretty much come in here looking like a runner with a Patagonia jumper on and just like super casual. She's probably the coolest CEO we've ever seen. So,
oh, thank you.
Yeah. So talk us through that point. So you've got a bunch of people, you've got some funding, and you've still got a three acronym title.
Yeah.
And a mentor now.
And a mentor.
Yeah. And I started like, well, what type of systems can I bring online that I can set up stuff, you know, for like working remotely? Because I didn't like, they didn't have that set up. They had a few things. So like project management software, like monday.com, which is really good.
Yep.
And I actually use the same one for my own project for the Plastic Runner. So I was using that to train my other volunteers. So I was already kind of familiarized with a project management system.
Yeah.
Then I also used Slack before, you know, in terms of informal communication stuff. And it's like, well, how can I set up something that it has a shape and a system that brings kind of like a comprehensive way to onboard people? And I just started like going online, like Google, how to onboard someone online, like, you know, like how to set up like stand-up meetings online. And like,
do you get satisfaction out of solving these problems? Like, even though you're not... Like technology is not your background. Do you just get a kick out of it or something?
Oh yeah, it was really fun. You know, like once you actually see people like getting back to you.
Not everyone's wired like that.
It's something that I guess I take it for granted every now and then because it just comes a bit natural. Like I would just say, well, how can I fix this? If I don't know something, I'll just do my own research. I go online. We got Google. We can find someone having the same issue.
Yeah.
That you just ask online, say, hey, I'm having this problem. And then you got 20 people replying and you got an answer in less than 24 hours.
Right.
I think it turns circles back to your transparency. So when you were saying to your staff, like, I might mess this up. Like, I might fuck it up. Like, just being able to do that, having that, like, the ability to just be vulnerable, I guess.
But also coming back to setting up Slack channels, setting up an entire process of how to work remotely. I've got clients who think that they're savvy, digital wise, and they still can't use Monday. They still can't use Asana. They still can't use Slack, not even Teams. You know, Google Sheets, I got to show them how to use it sometimes.
Well, I think it's because if you can't like look to yourself to be like, I don't know how to do this.
That's the thing.
If you research it,
if you have a self-limiting speech,
so there's an ego thing to it.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's a self-limiting speech. You know, it's just like if you tell yourself this is too hard for me.
So that's it. That self-limiting is probably the key thing here, is that doesn't exist in your lifestyle.
I mean, look, I know like I don't have a technological background and I don't know how to program a computer, like, but I can build up a website or I can do different things. Then if I don't have the other skill, it's like, well, how long is that going to take me to learn it or learn something that can come up with the MVP, you know? It's just like...
But you like learning. You like learning in general.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I did the 8 years degree, then I did a master's degree, then I did the diving. You have to study as well. And it's like, it's always kind of fun.
To me, that sounds exhausting. I'm just like, fuck that. Like I did the bare minimum at uni just to get past so I can get my first job and start earning some money.
Degree-wise, it sounds exhausting, but all the Google stuff, like Google is my friend. I use Google.
Yeah, I love Google. Or even like a podcast, you know, it's more like, well, again, going back into the running, when you're running out there for like 20 hours, I love podcasts. So I will have all this like bunch of podcasts around like innovation and entrepreneurship, you know, like side hustle. and that's how I learn a few things in terms of, well, how do you adapt, let's say, to crisis, especially now with COVID. I listen to a whole bunch of, you know, adaptation and resilience, like how to build resilience, like how to communicate with your team and stuff like that.
But learning can be tiring. Learning can be exhausting trying to listen, trying to have that mindset. So you're a sponge and you're absorbing stuff.
It happens sometimes,
At which point do you just switch on to be like, actually, I just want to listen to my favorite music or... Yeah.
Look, it happens. Like, for example, like after last year, I really needed a break by the end of like, you know, December. I was just like, I'm really done with this. I'm not being really productive. I need to go away. And it did just be away of everything. It's just me doing something like without anyone around me.
Yep.
So I went on a backpacking trip to Tassie.
Wow.
By myself.
Wow.
Because I just didn't want to talk to many people. Yep. So I was like, I'm just going to go and cycle like 500Ks because that's awesome. my kind of meditation routine.
Awesome. Yeah.
And I have never done this.
What sort of bike did you cycle on?
A road bike.
A road bike? What sort of road bike? Because I'm a bit of a bike nerd. I've recently got into it and I'm a bit of a nerd now.
It's just got Contessa Spitster.
Okay.
Like, look, that's my usual commuter. I was actually expecting a mountain bike to come in or like a gravel bike.
Mm.
But with the whole COVID stuff, a lot of people got bikes and then the whole stock dropped. And I was like, well,
I've got this thing. I might as well just start using it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was like, my bike's still in back order. I'm just going to like set up my current bike in whatever it looks like. So that's like a Franken bike, I call it, because it's like almost like a mix between gravel and road.
Yeah, nice.
I did that for 2.5 weeks. And
two and a half weeks and you covered 500 Ks.
Yeah, and I did some running as well. I've been...
Of course. Why would you not do running?
Of course
do an entire marathon. Did you did you go for a swim as well?
I was just chilling. But
wow.
Yeah, so that was really good because it was just getting back into, you know, just simple stuff like camping and just cycling and looking at things really in a slower pace.
Yeah.
You know, because you can drive everywhere, you know, and like, oh, you can drive all the way to Hobart in just one day. But to cycle that shit, it was just like... You know, like, again, like the resilience and like
endurance.
Going through pain. I was like going through some knee pain in one of the hills, especially when you have that section between Derby and St. Helens.
I haven't cycled it, but
there's a big hill, like two hills, so two big climbs.
What's the percentage on the?
I can't remember, but I was cursing in Spanish, so that's pretty. Just to give you a reference, it was bad, and I was like cursing and just bringing back all the shit, you know, all the people like, I hate you, and I dedicate this hill to you, and I'm just gonna climb
this it. Next pedal's for this dude, and this next pedal is for this her.
I mean, I don't hate anyone, but it's like, no, it's like,
wow.
Yeah, so that was really good. It kind of like recharged my batteries. Awesome. I took my journal, did some journaling too.
Yeah. So it's kind of like your therapy almost.
I mean, you have to look after yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like if you're not really aware of that stuff, of how to recharge, then you're going to be struggling, especially in a position like mine, that you have to be, you know, like safety net for your staff, that you have your shit together or you're pretending you have it, but...
It'd be strong for them and leave the business.
And that was the same thing. Like, I was like, look, guys, I don't really know what's going to happen in the next 6 months. And I was super like open. Mm. And I was like, I'm going to, like, my mission here is that I want to keep everyone employed. We're lucky that we got JobKeeper, you know, we got funding.
Sorry, you had 8 employees at the time?
We had, so we were 6.
Okay.
So it was me, the CEO back then, and then the 4 reports.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some interns, and then we had like we built it up, a volunteer program. Mm-hmm. So we had 15 core volunteers as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it was from 3 staff, it just built up into 6 and interns and volunteers. So that was pretty cool. Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have to be super open and say, I don't have a crystal ball, you know, I don't really know what's going to happen the next year. I can only see this more as a problem. I can see it as a challenge, more as an issue. I can see it as an opportunity for us to pivot or create something really good with what we have. We went, for example, they have never done any digital events. We did all online. So in a few weeks, I just said to everyone, I want you to come up with digital events. We have all these grants. We need to create community engagement because we're not having any physical events. Mm-hmm. How can we deliver the same stuff without the constraints?
So how to deliver a digital event that's mainly taken or absorbed as a physical form? How did you?
Well, we kind of like repurposed it, you know, like a little bit. Well, what's the concept of the grant? And you go follow the guidelines, you know, what are you meant to deliver? And then you kind of like, oh, it's just like environmental awareness of stuff. Like,
like quizzes, environment, or gamification, stuff like that? Or?
No, it was more like, well, we build up toolkits, like recognizing species and like for people to identify flora, fauna, and some other things.
Okay.
And then we took that to online that we basically launched the toolkits and we ran a Q&A session, you know, and one of the team just ran that session as well and explaining what was the purpose of the toolkit and all the stuff. So we had to be really creative and also kind of understanding, well, if it doesn't work, it's not a failure. Mm. That's what I said to them, like, this is your MVP. Mm-hmm. You have to come up with something.
Mm.
If it doesn't work, don't stress. That's fine. Learning. Like just learning, you know, and you do a satisfaction survey at the end so you can get some feedback back and then we reinvent the wheel and like we go on and on.
Yeah, awesome.
So you kept kind of building that credibility and kept introducing different things up until you got to the CEO level?
What happened then is that so the CEO at the time, who's the Riverkeeper, the Riverkeeper is like the spokesperson, you know, of the organization, like the kind of knowledge keeper, you know, of the river system. And so it's a really cool position. So he was basically like the man with many hats at the time because there was not enough staff, you know, they were pretty underfunded and you have to do a lot of things without having
much resources.
So he did a lot of really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. But then with this whole pandemic and going online, he was really struggling with, you know, going into digital. So I kind of stepped forward and said, like, you know, don't worry, this is operational. You don't have to worry. I will just review separately, you know, in anything and just keep on running with the team and we can sort of have discussions, you know, in terms of what's happening. I update you, you update me, you keep doing your advocacy work. I keep doing project stuff and operational stuff. And then we sort of workshop the thing and then we came up, well, I'm basically the operating officer. It's not really executive because you got the executive, you know, name on it. So let's do it like that. So we frame it like that. And it's like, you know, Corinne, I'm tired. I want to be the river keeper. You actually do it really well. I'm going to recommend you to be the next CEO if that has to happen. And then the board will have to take a decision. But like you basically build up the system yourself.
How did that conversation go down? Were you open to it? Were you just like, ooh, I'm freaked out now? Like,
no.
How did that – or was it just inevitable that's bound to happen?
I mean, it was going to happen at some point and he was kind of like telling me – giving me hints, you know, of like, oh, you know, I'm kind of like down with the operational stuff and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Like it's going to happen. I want to be the Rubik. And it's like, well, how can I make your job enjoyable? That's it. Like what are the things that you want to keep – that you want to keep doing and just give me all the crap that you want to be responsible of, you know, and I would just delegate that with the team and sort it out. So when that moment happened, there was not many changes because it was just a title transition. He said like, well, you're already operating as the CEO.
Wow.
So that's kind of the most logical thing to do. I was super excited because it was like, holy crap, I never thought that, you know, from fish market life, waking up at 2:30 in the morning and like picking up rubbish in the trail, I was just going to become like a CEO from a charity, which is really awesome. But pretty aware that, okay, well, I need to really look after this baby because it was really something good.
It's a lot of responsibility.
It's a lot of responsibility, but it's fun. That's how I want to see it. I don't want to see it like, oh my God, this is like the most stressful thing. I'm going to collapse and freak out and run in circles, you know, like a headless chicken. It's like, no, like I just need to be super honest with myself that some stuff I'm not going to be the one with all the knowledge and that's fine, but that's not my role. I can't be the best, you know, accountant or the best engineer or whatever, like, but I'm going to bring people on board that are going to give me the knowledge or some advice, and then I'll have to be taking that and create a decision. So it's been really fun, but yeah, it's kind of like, oh my God, I made it.
So how are you currently balancing that out with Plastic Runner? Is Plastic Runner still going, or have you integrated it with your current?
Yeah, that's a good question. So like, look, last year, because it was hectic and basically I couldn't really run anything physical, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to put this on pause right now because I'm still doing something really good, which is basically a similar kind of course, you know, but with funding, which is the dream. So I'm going to put it on pause and I'm just going to focus on work right now. So I did that for a whole year. And then I ran my first event after COVID in December. So that was really fun. We did a run with Arc'teryx, which was my sponsor back then. And we just brought a whole bunch of people to Stomping Ground to have like a picking up rubbish and having beer and snacks later. So it was really cool. And then I did another run. When was it? Oh, a few weeks ago for Stonington Council. So we did a little plogging event. Oh, nice. Sweet. So we did it in the Glen Iris wetland. So it was pretty cool. Pretty small event, but again, it's like, well, this doesn't need to be like my whole life right now, but I'm just going to try to make a balance, you know, with work. I can still run this stuff, you know. So I'm thinking I'm potentially going to just run one event every quarter. Just to make it more like sustainable and then like it's not really consuming.
How would someone get involved in Plastic Runner if they're trying to help, volunteer, do things to improve the mission? How would one kind of get around that?
So they can always check on the website, which is plasticrunner.com. If it's not an event happening, you know, in a while, they can always come into the Yarra River Keeper and help as well, because we do have more events. Because either way, you're still helping the environment and, you can support it. I do have a few volunteers that they putting up content every now and then. So if someone wants to create content, more than happy and welcome. Basically right now, the Plastic Runner is like the space for people to try things. So I had this girl like once contacting me like, hey, I want to like write articles for you. And it's like, well, you got the platform. Like just go for it. You know, if it's within brand, like around sustainability and environment, just go for it. Like it's everyone's platform right now. I mean, like I'd rather like put it out there for sharing it with people. And like if you want to create articles, that's good for you, good experience.
Get involved, you're not as precious about it. It's just as long as someone follows the same mission, has a certain, a similar tone, then they
just don't support coal. That's it. Or money.
For sure.
But
wow. Okay. But we're starting to probably slowly wrap up here. We could probably sit here for another 2 hours and keep going.
Yeah, we have so many more questions. We're going to hold it back a little bit. One question before we wrap up, though. We've talked a little bit about the mission and all the things that you're doing to sort of find that mission and to get to that mission, but I don't think we've actually articulated it. Like, have you got it to a point where it's in like some sort of sentence or something? Like, what is that? What is that mission?
I think like the main sentence is like act local, think global. That's my thing, because I know like I can't fix all the issues in the world. Like if I start thinking, oh my God, the great garbage patch, you know, in the Pacific and all this shit and like all the plastics in the world and like fish dying. It's like you get really depressed, really frustrated, and then you just like don't do anything because you're
so
breath.
Act local, live,
think global.
Think global. Yeah, wow. Okay.
So that's my kind of motto, tagline, I guess. Because it was more like, well, I can't really expect that I'm going to fix the world right now because I'm just someone and I'm not greater. Like maybe one day, but not right now. But I thought, well, how can I maybe help my local environment or my local community to create a change? Then maybe I can do more as an individual in my own group. Like thinking, you know, how can I just save the world tomorrow?
So this is going to sound weird, but I'll try to I'll try to frame it in a way that's not going to sound as weird. So through your intention and selfish mindset, you've managed to create a career for yourself, but also have a satisfying project on the side. And it's kind of the other way around, because the side project is what got you the career and the title.
That's the thing.
But you haven't abandoned the side thing because you're still paying homage to it, because that's what got you into the CEO seat. So I guess it's kind of your determination and your stubbornness that's gotten you to that point of just being outdoors, caring for the environment, and just having that empathy with whatever you do.
Yeah, I think it's just more like the love for environment, the outdoors, you know, like if, well, how crappy it will be that, you know, in 30 more years, everything is gone. That's shocking. And having all that information from my master's degree, you know, like just feeding myself with all the, like, facts and things like, I don't know, like by 2050, there's no fish in the water or, you know, like all the plants die. It's like, shit. I have to do something, you know, and I have to bring some purpose into my life to at least, like, if nothing happens, I can say, well, I did something about it or I tried.
It also doesn't seem like you, if you hear no, it doesn't mean shit to you.
No, because, like, look, I think you're going to get a lot of no's in your life. I did suffer a little bit of imposter syndrome when I was applying to all these jobs when I graduated. But I was like, you know what? It's not that someone is shutting you down. They're just redirecting you to somewhere else. So I'm kind of happy that I got a lot of rejection letters, because I'm thinking, well, if I didn't get all this rejection stuff, then probably I wouldn't be here right now.
Exactly.
And I also, because of the rejection letter, I got my current pet. So that was really good.
There you go.
Yeah, awesome.
There you go.
Yeah. So I was feeling sad and I just went and got a guinea pig. But yeah.
it just seems like you've got a mindset that obviously is developed over time, but you're so sure of yourself, and as a person, you kind of just know what your purpose is, and that's a rare thing to find. I'm still trying to find out what the fuck I'm on this earth to do. It's just like, what are we doing, man?
Totally. Well, I'm super inspired hearing this and having this conversation, because even back to when you were talking about the coral, you're talking about like enjoying like the diving, seeing the coral dying, and then thinking we're going to do something about this, and then taking action.
Well, like, look, like, to be honest, I didn't know shit what I was doing when I was coming here. You know, like I feel like, oh my God, I finished the degree and I'm working, like, you know, cleaning toilets. Like, what? How my dad is going to feel? Like, I just pay you a whole university degree and you're cleaning a spew. And I was like, no, Dad, I'm going somewhere. Don't worry. Like,
the spew is part of the plan. Trust me.
but even that's like inspiring to think of seeing a problem in nature to then try and solve.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm a designer. I'm looking at, like, okay, this letting isn't right on this website. Like, we've got to fix this shit now.
It's like cosmetic shit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like, it so means nothing compared to that. Like, it's, I agree. Yeah. We're kind of lost. Compared.
Yeah. All right, Luke, let's have a bit of a workshop after this to redefine ourselves.
Yeah, and like, look, another book I can totally recommend, it's The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, definitely. Literally, that's basically going back to something that my dad always told me. Like, you know, life is going to throw a lot of balls at you. There's some that you have to catch and others that you have to let go. And that, like, until today, I constantly think in myself, am I going to grab this ball? Or I'm just going to let it go. I'm just like, I'd rather let it go, you know, and that's fine. It's not something I need to focus on right now.
Yeah, see, that's very important with parenting. I mean, you got to pay kudos to that as well. Like, that saying is probably still embedded, you know, in your head right now.
Yeah, I think my dad was responsible, you know, that mentality of like, just don't get a no for an answer. And if you don't get what you want right now, it's going to come through a different way.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. Another door will open and onto the next one. Yeah,
just keep looking. Keep, like, if you're doing something, at least you're doing something. It's better than nothing, you know?
Yeah.
And like, even with this stuff, like the plastic runner, I was like, my dad's like, what are you doing? You're running events and picking up rubbish? And you using all this time to making a website?
Come back home.
Well, no, he did that. Like, he did say that many times. I was like, well, but then he kind of like got it in like, in a way, you know, like, well, I'm happy that you're doing something, even if it's not creating an income right now for you, because you're doing something.
Mm.
I would be worried if you were just like watching Netflix all day. But yeah, he was like, no, like people that do stuff, they get what they want. Absolutely. That's it. Whatever you're doing, it's something.
Yeah.
It's going to take you somewhere.
You're working towards something. It may not be apparent at this very minute.
Yeah, but it's
going to 2 or 3 years from now, you're going to look back and be like, oh, I was building up to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's incredible. All right. Back to wrapping up. Anyone who's looking to kind of do something or create a side project or pursue their mission, do you have any advice for them?
Just don't be afraid. I think like the main thing a friend told me that until today I was telling people to do, put yourself out there. So his advice back then, it was like, oh, why don't you like email people in LinkedIn that you admired or people working in top positions in companies that you would like to work for or in the industry that you're in. It's like, who? Me? Like this little one, like I'm no one. They're everyone, you know, like they're just someone. And I was like, they're not going to reply to me. It's like, you'll be surprised.
Yep.
So I was like, okay. So I just did this template, you know, like, hi, blah, 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 blah. Let's go and grab some coffee and I admire you. And I was like, I don't know who this person is. I'm like, no, just do it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And I was like, I'm so not going to get any replies. I'm going to be a loser.
Mm.
I ended up getting basically, I was at 80% success.
Wow.
Like, and contacting people like in CEO positions, you know, and I was like, shit. So if the CEO of, let's say, Food Bank wants to catch up with me, I'm actually someone.
That's huge.
You know, that's huge. And I was just having a really kind of normal conversation. It's like, how do you got into your role? You know, like how do you got into your position or how do you got into finding your mission? And then that sort of gave me an idea like, okay, so I got all these people that came from a really normal background, you know, like basically like me, like doing different things and blah, blah, blah. And they just found the right thing and the right timing. That's a thing.
Mm.
Like they had skills, but it was the right timing for them to bring them up.
Yep. Yep. So, but just the confidence that gave you from receiving almost 80% replies.
That's a thing. At and that time, you look, know? You, a lot of the times I think people put the CEOs as like you're in a shrine. Like, oh my God, you're a CEO. You're like untouchable. Like you have a halo on your face. Absolutely. I don't know, like some sort of light. It's like, no, it's like normal people that at some point they were students, maybe working in bars, restaurants, maybe cleaning tables, wiping toilets, you know, cleaning a spew.
Or wiping off pee off swimsuits.
and yeah, like it's just like you find yourself in this position right now. It's like, well, if someone asks me anytime, like, Karine, how the hell you got into like, let's go for a walk, you know, let's go for a coffee. I'll give you like what I've learned and I can share it because like sharing is caring. But yeah, it's like you'll be surprised that all these people in positions of power, you know, they are pretty normal people. And it's something that anyone can actually do if you want to. You know, it doesn't need to be your end goal. Like if you don't really want to, you can still success whatever.
Yeah.
We just be happy. That's it.
No, that's really good advice. A lot of people usually give advice, but without that kind of example or without the application of it. So it's really good that you pointed that out.
I think just be happy. That's a thing. If your happiness comes with like wiping toilets and cleaning a spew on a boat, that's fine. That's your happiness, you know? Mm-hmm. But if you don't want to have a leadership position, that's not a failure. That's a different journey. That's it.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
All right. So if people want to connect to you or reach out to you for a coffee, for a run, collect rubbish, just give us all your social plugins and your websites. How do we connect with you?
So the website is theplasticrunner.com.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just send an email or follow it on Instagram as theplasticrunner. Also finding me on LinkedIn. More than happy to connect as Karine Traeger. Or just finding the organization. If my name sounds a bit weird, they can just go to the Yarra Riverkeeper and just finding me there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been probably one of my favorite episodes, to be honest. I probably shouldn't say that, but it is what it is.
Well, it's a year coming, right? Like we had Karen booked in like a year ago.
Yeah, before the pandemic.
Like
in that
2 week before COVID, like I think just before the lockdown happened.
Yeah.
And we're just like, oh, maybe we shouldn't, because the week after was lockdown. So maybe we shouldn't do it. And then
I'm happy that we actually reschedule it because, yeah, I know I got the
true
story to tell.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. This has been so insightful. I've actually learned something tonight.
About the coral and the algae.
That. SpongeBob SquarePants? No. I think to be completely transparent, I think I need to look at what the purpose is of whatever the hell Luke and I are doing or whatever I'm doing personally. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think we need to kind of find that and start finding a way to give back, because Luke and I have multiple things going on.
Mm-hmm. But
I think we've always kind of debated whether to kind of give back and what direction, how does it make sense branding wise and things like that. But I think we just need to kind of
go for it,
throw ourselves at it.
Just
figure it out from
there. Like even doing this, you know, like that's really cool that you're having this as a side hustle.
Yeah,
because like you're doing something different. Like as you said, you're a designer. I don't know what you do, but
I do lots of stuff. But yeah, I'm a general manager of a user experience agency.
Yeah, but this is different. So, absolutely. Yeah, it's something different that you can try, and you never know where it's gonna take you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you again. Hope we didn't take up too much of your time, but this has been awesome, and I can't wait to hear it back.
100%, definitely.
All right.
Well, thank you. See ya. Thank you.